Well, of the various Indo-European peoples and groups moving out of these centers into new centers, one of the most important for the West was the Celtic community. And the area of its constellation is Southeast Europe, in the area of Bavaria and Austria. At that place and time, 1000 BC, they are called the Hallstatt culture, H-A-L-S-T-A-T-T, the Hallstatt culture. They're rather heavy wagons with, like the wagons that went across the plains here, when was it, about a century ago. When they get into Western France, a new brilliance comes into the culture, and this brilliance and a period is known as the Latène, L-A, and then capital T-E-N-E with a grave accent over the E, over the first E. The Latène culture. Real brilliant chariot warriors, glorious gold work and metallurgy, with clean, very graceful designs. It's really a group of ruthless barbarians, but glorious metal artists. And it was a group of these people who, in various waves, move into the British Isles and over into Ireland. Now, this earlier Bronze Age group in the British Isles were, as I say, mother right people, matrilateral in their descent and so forth. Uncle is the governor, actually, of the mother's son and so forth. The Celts, however, are patriarchal, and vigorously so. As you move from the barbarian to the, let's say, British and then Irish areas, the force of the patriarchal accent becomes less and less emphatic, and the continuation of the female accent more and more perceptible. So that by the time you get to Ireland and Wales, the mother goddesses are still the most powerful. And the typical story that one finds in the legendary dating from those periods is this, of a patriarchal, young patriarchal warrior type who is led astray by following some animal or something of the kind, and he comes to a fairy hill, a hill into which the old mother goddess people have retreated with the arrival of the patriarch. And the queen of the fairy hill becomes his mistress. When he arrives there, he finds the queen in distress. There are the people of another fairy hill that are harassing her. And he becomes her champion and stays with her. Now, as in Wagner's Tannhäuser, he may, and the Venus Mountain of Wagner, he may stay there for a long, long time, and it may seem to him to be only a year or so. And then a sort of nostalgia for his old time home will come over him, and he will ask the goddess, or the fairy queen, permission to visit home again. And she will say, well, yes, but be careful not to touch the earth. And when he comes riding back, nobody knows who he is. The country is completely different from anything he had known before. Something like hundreds of years will have passed. And let's say he drops his sword or drops his helmet or something or other, and he stoops over to pick it up, touches the earth, and whew, just disappears. He has been dead for 100 years, and now it's confirmed. Well, this becomes a major motif in the later Arthurian themes, and we'll see it time and time again, of the hero who befriends and defends the chatelaine, the lady of a besieged castle, and becomes her consort and so forth and so on. And you can see from that old Celtic Bronze Age coming together of the male powers and the female, this theme announced, which comes rolling down right through the ages. Well, when you start going into the entering of Neolithic people into Europe, you get into a pretty complicated thing. There are the urn burial people, and there are the bell urn people, and one kind after another. The identification of these different peoples who came into Europe and over into the British Isles is extremely complicated. There were almost certainly very important Mediterranean continuities connected with that old tin trade. Irish gold and Irish bronze are distributed all through Europe. In the Hellenistic period, you know that figure of the dying Gaul, this naked Gallic warrior, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, wearing a torque. The torque is a kind of necklace with two big, heavy heads meeting. He's wearing an Irish torque down there in Turkey. The trade was really very strong between those islands and the mainland. And whatever the peoples were, I don't think they've been identified really at all. There have been attempts to identify different waves with the waves in the Irish mythological cycles, which tell of one arrival after another. But those are very obscure. They're the kind of people that would have been on the mainland as well. What their specific restricted racial affinities are, I don't think we really know. There have been always, between Spain and Ireland, connections by sea. And there were sea connections. Caesar, when he gets into Gaul, remarks the sea coast people that have a trade running up and down the coast. And was this trade in gold, trade in tin, trade in bronze, and so forth.